Tonight, the Commander-in-Chief of the AV Club, John Tatey, rides sidecar. Then later, we'll check in with pretty late pal Todd Belcore. And finally, comedian Dwayne Kennedy joins the fun from L.A. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
It is such a beautiful night on Michigan Avenue. You are listening to Pretty Late, and we are live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, joined by, now you've been promoted to Commander-in-Chief.
Commander-in-Chief. I'll take that.
Yeah.
It's a Commander-in-Chief night.
Yeah, I think so. This is weird to have my screen on and seeing the results come in.
You've got the CNN. I can't see it because I'm blocked by a wilderness of my own screens.
I know. This is kind of ridiculous in here. I can make that work for you. So, yes, the returns are coming in. Sanders has won Michigan. And Trump has won Mississippi and Michigan as well. I don't know. It's just, I can't. And you started reading a piece by Dwayne Kennedy, who will be coming on the air at 1 a.m. I was hesitant to post his piece because there are so many things I've been talking about that, you know, there are conservatives who are saying that Donald Trump does not represent them. They're concerned about him leading the party because he really is. They don't consider him to be one of them. But I contend that many of the things that he says out loud seem to be elements of what have been quietly discussed for the last 30 years. Not even quietly, but alluded to.
You know, for me, the quintessential example of that this year was Jeb Bush, who appointed himself the serious candidate. You know, he was the early anti-Trump. And you remember when Trump came out with his proposal to not admit any Muslims to the country until we figure this whole thing out,
right,
whatever that means.
Mm-hmm. And but Syrians could come as long as they were Christians, wasn't
that? And that's what Jeb had said a couple months earlier.
He
had said, let's prioritize the Christian refugees. Now, the substance of what Jeb said was no different in practice from what Trump said, is that Trump came out and said it in the negative. He said what that let's let the Christians in first thing actually meant.
Right.
And Jeb came out immediately and said, oh, this is not serious. This is not a serious proposal. And I just felt like, you know, it's the same thing you said, Jeb. And you could go down the line. They're all like that. Trump is expressing things. He's just being blunt. He's not doing the dog whistle.
He's not being politically correct, is what they call it. It appeals to people. They feel like they're being hamstrung by being nice. That's what I've contended, is that being politically correct is somehow synonymous with being
kind
decent.
And
yes,
yeah, compassionate. Exactly.
I don't know what's happening? I've always had a problem with Hillary Clinton appearing to be the heir apparent, right? Somehow, and that's how she came across in the last election. My mom and I, you know, we sort of try to talk about it because she's very she loves Hillary, and there are many people who do.
Yeah,
I just, for many reasons, whether it's, you know, the policies and also just the negative reaction, she galvanizes people so strongly that I don't see her as somebody who can really lead our country.
To an insane degree. I don't entirely understand it, but I partly understand it. And I'll say that Sanders pulled out this surprise win in Michigan tonight, and there was a moment in the debate, and it's been brought up a little on the cable news networks, I think rightly so. There was a moment in debate where she brought out this big talking point she was going to hit Bernie with, which is that he didn't support the auto bailout.
Bailout, right, which obviously in Michigan that's significant.
Well,
and then
but it was such a mendacious point for her to make because he supported the bill that was focused on bailing out the auto industry, which she was referring to quite cagily, is another bill, the sort of Wall Street bailout package that did include some money for the auto industry.
Right.
And she characterized that as Bernie not supporting the auto bailout. And I think that the voters of Michigan were savvy enough to see through that sort of distortion, which is how he described it quite accurately. And, you know, it was a close race tonight. What is it now? It's showing 50-48%. I wonder how much of a difference that makes, because she didn't quite get the support in the urban areas tonight that that she was supposed to, putting scare quotes around supposed
well,
to.
Well, and Michigan is such an interesting place now because obviously all attention has been turned to Flint, where the governor of Michigan and many of the politicians and at higher levels have ignored this crisis in Flint. And so it's surprising that I don't know why the state would go, well, Trump seems like somebody who would take care of that. That seems like somebody who's compassionate enough to make sure this would never happen in our state again.
He's so capably created this narrative as someone who gets things done, who builds things. I think one of the most resonant lines he's had in this whole campaign is at the debate when Rubio started to attack him on something about jobs. And Trump said, I've hired 10,000 people. You guys have never created any jobs. Which, you know, you can debate the fairness of that remark, but it certainly, I mean, it hit home with me when he said it. Like, the way he said it and the way he set himself apart from these quote-unquote career politicians, yes. I thought was very powerful.
Well, that's what people are responding to. They're saying they don't want career politicians because somehow you should be in politics with no experience.
Right.
I don't really know how that works. I only say that because I was in a car ride one time from Springfield, and there was a representative who – there were several reps in the car, and it was weird. It's weird to travel with legislators and hearing this. And I was kind of half falling asleep because I try to rest. Every chance I get, I sleep. People always want to know when I sleep. It's usually in any moving vehicle, anything that's any sort of transportation. When the engine's going, I'm like
You're like my newborn baby.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. Oh, isn't that the best? Yes.
Yeah, very effective.
Yeah, the baby won't sleep. Let's go for a ride.
Yep.
But I was kind of, my head was bobbing around. But listening to them talk about the mechanics of negotiation, of building, you know, this network, you know, you have to be able to build a relationship amongst other legislators, amongst other politicians in order to make progress.
Right.
So assuming that you can achieve an executive office, and they were talking about the governor, and now a year later, I think that would also apply to someone who wants to be the president, who would have to build relationships, not just nationally, but globally. This is problematic. If I have to choose between a career politician and Trump, I don't.
Well, but the alternative in the GOP right now is Ted Cruz, and the cable networks are now calling Idaho for Cruz. And, you know, Cruz is not a coalition builder himself. In fact, he's established this brand of not cooperating and of being incredibly obstinate in Washington. And some people are on board with that. But I saw a great interview after Super Tuesday when Chris Matthews had a Cruz surrogate on and just asked him, can you name one coalition that Cruz, one team that Cruz has built to support a bill in the Senate? And this poor hapless surrogate, I forget who it was, I think maybe a Texas politician, had no answer and just kept trying to trot out the talking points, and Matthews kept hitting him. Just named one team, one instance of cooperation in the Senate that Cruz has facilitated. It hasn't happened, and yet he is clearly the only other brand with any weight in the GOP primaries right now.
Yeah. I mean, because and I've talked to many members of the GOP who also say Cruz is not their guy. I've met anybody who wants Cruz or Trump that is a Republican. They tend to go more toward Kasich and Rubio, and they are so far behind.
Well, these are the circles in which we travel, I guess.
That's true. I mean, we have listeners who have told us that they favor Donald Trump. And again, it usually is because they don't want career politicians. And I just and we had a lovely call. Yes, go ahead.
You know, I can't really blame the frustration with the system, though. Can you? I mean, I understand what you're saying about experience. And look, nobody wants President Trump less than I. Well, I guess I'd be a little entertained by President Trump, I have to say. It would be amusing.
Craig does this when he's trying to, like, not say something.
Yeah, I know. That
I can't.
But I have to say, I understand the frustration with the system right now.
Yes.
Don't you?
Yeah, absolutely. I understand it. And I guess that I'm not compelled to go, screw it, let's just see what kind of a circus we can create with Donald Trump.
I don't like experience with anything. I want my Uber drivers to not even have a license moving forward. That'd be
I've had that guy. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by the Commander-in-Chief of the AV Club, John Tatey. We've promoted him. And it is Minor Tuesday. What do you think? Super Tuesday is not accurate, as the CNN graphics are
showing. Yeah, we're looking at the CNN broadcast right now. And all night, during the commercials, they've had this Super Tuesday graphic up. And maybe CNN just loves Tuesdays and thinks every Tuesday is
maybe.
Super.
Maybe, yeah.
But I think someone should tell CNN it ain't Super Tuesday anymore.
There's no, I mean, because you have like your manic Mondays, right? You got Hump Wednesday.
Yeah, that's right. Tuesday and Wacky Wednesdays.
Yeah, you know, the Tuesday and Thursday are sort of out there dangling with nothing to define them. So maybe Super Tuesday is going to stick.
That's just, they have team spirit.
Yes,
I love it.
I think so. S-U-P-E-R, soup. That's, I'm sorry.
We've been talking about politics, can I make a politics-related TV recommendation?
Yes, please.
Open up your Hulu app. I know the Hulu is not quite as popular as your Netflix and your HBO Go, perhaps.
I don't know how to use it. Is it another fee-based thing?
Well, you can watch Hulu with ads you have to pay for the app still with ads, and then there's a higher tier that's without ads. It costs more.
Mm-hmm.
But the Triumph election special, do you know Triumph the Insult Comic?
Yes.
Comic Dog, Robert Smigel. And
I don't know why I did this. I think the puppet dog is implied.
Patty is making a hand dog here. Yeah. This is the funniest political comedy of the year, I think. And it's in a year where political comedy has struggled a little bit. Donald Trump is so farcical in himself that he's proven hard to satirize. The Daily Show, which was a standard bearer for TV political comedy for so long, has lost some of its relevance with Trevor Noah.
Do you like John Oliver?
Is it too crass? No, it's not too crass. I find John Oliver a little cutesy, I'll say. And I think the sort of pageant-y endings that he has to every show are a bit much. Don't really go in for his social media stuff as much as some people do. The whole Make Donald Trump Again campaign.
Yeah, that was big a couple weeks ago.
That's a big deal. He sold out of those Make Donald Trump Again caps that he was selling. So it clearly it caught on, and I'm in the minority, but I'm not crazy about John Oliver.
And has the Brits making fun of us run its course yet? You know, like being here and sort of capitalizing on our chaos. Can we stop?
I don't mind it, but this actually brings me to a quibble that I have with John Oliver, if we can call it that, which is that I feel like he actually does not bring that foreign perspective to the show as much. I think it's a show that an American anchor could do just as well as someone from across the pond, so to speak.
It's just the haughty accent then.
Really? It's the accent. I guess he has a certain British silliness to him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's a talented guy and he's funny. He's just not for me, I think. But this Triumph election special, it's an hour and a half, and you'd think that would be too much Triumph, but he has these different segments and it's more innovative, and he goes deeper into these antagonistic concepts than Triumph has ever gone before.
Has he been going to the primaries?
He's been going to events and talking to, he has a long segment with Mike Huckabee from when Huckabee was still in the race, coaching him on insult comedy, and the premise is that Trump is basically the Triumph of the Republican field, so Triumph is actually a key consultant for the GOP candidates.
Yeah, when you drive Marco Rubio to try to do what they say about the size of a man's hands.
Oh,
it was so awkward. I don't know, it was so awesome.
It was awful.
How are we talking about penis size during the Republican debates? How is that? I mean, the next thing you know, I mean, like, does Hillary have to talk about the Diva Cup? What's happening?
Do people even know what that is?
If they listen to this show all the way through to the end, they do, actually.
wasn't that... I mean, I really feel sorry for how Rubio has flamed out. I mean, it was so clear to everyone what his strategy was to become this sort of mini Trump against Trump, and it failed so spectacularly, even as it would seem that you made Donald Trump make a fool of himself talking about the size of his member in a presidential debate,
so
for
crazy.
God's sake. But clearly, as we saw tonight, it had no effect, and yet Rubio in the two big states tonight
couldn't help it. Sorry, God.
Rubio's all shrinkage
He's
now.
He's all shrinkage, yes.
Yeah.
What they say about a man's polling percentages.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't know what to do.
Well, what do they say about a man with small polls?
Yeah, exactly. There it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's not going to win the election, that's for sure. Look at this. Bernie Sanders, is giving his victory
speech.
Well,
This is from earlier, actually.
How am I missing everything? Apparently,
he had a rally earlier, and then they had to throw together this sort of impromptu press conference because I don't think the Sanders campaign expected to win or be competitive well, be competitive, yeah, but to compete for the win in Michigan. So they, it was very cute. I think at Sanders' hotel, they set up this space where they just sort of slapped three lawn signs on the wall, and he walked up to the microphone and said, "Hey, it looks like we had a good night in Michigan," which
weird.
He did.
This is so, how does this, what do you see now? I mean, we've all, like, every step of the way tried to, I think about 2 months ago, people stopped trying to make predictions.
Yeah, so like, wisely so.
Yeah, there's just no wrapping your mind around this, because there's no brokering delegates, which would, because it would be robbery at this point with the Republicans, right?
Well, there may inevitably be. I mean, brokering, I don't know, but a right. contested convention looks, you know,
but it'll be robbery.
Fairly likely. Well, I think there's one guy who's going to make that case pretty strongly, yes, that it would be robbery to take the nomination from the leader and the delegates, but that's not how the convention is set up. That's right. not how the convention has ever, party conventions have ever worked. But it also has been an eternity since we've had a really contested convention, and certainly not in the modern, what I would characterize as 1972 on,
right.
Modern era. Of the primaries.
Yeah, I mean, because I guess their contention would be that this is not who represents our party. We are still the party. We can still choose our own
candidate. Well, you know, there's been this argument that we heard a lot, and you haven't heard it quite as much lately, but that, you know, a majority of Republican voters don't want Trump to be their candidate, which certainly has been true in most of the primaries
then
so
where
far.
Are they?
But, you could say that about any candidate, and more strongly so for the other candidates. So it's sort of a self-defeating argument. But yes, you're going to hear that if this turns into a contested convention.
So bizarre. Are you ready to vote next week for our primaries?
I am ready, yes.
All right. I judges and everything? All right,
yes.
Then.
In fact, I even know what sub-circuit judge I'm voting for.
Yeah, got your list
out. I did
out.
My research.
The American Bar Association, all those recommendations.
That's right. Yeah,
that's how I do. More after this on 720 WGN. You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio with the editor-in-chief of the AV Club, John Tatey. And I know that Rob Martier must be busy because he's a big fan of yours and he's running around the newsroom. Esmeralda joins us up in traffic. Craig, of course, running the show. And give us a call. Join the conversation anytime, 312-981-7200. You can call or text us. But it is a busy night with all kinds of returns coming in, I guess.
You know, I'd love to hear from some Rubio voters if they're out there, wouldn't you?
I never hear from them.
You know, no one has made more. We talked about giving up predictions earlier in the show, mm-hmm. and I think no one has been wronger more often than the New York Times, they don't make predictions so much, but you can tell the way that their headlines are slanted and the angle that they put on their news analyses. And I don't know how many times they've said that Trump is fading and that his, you know.
Really?
Yes. I mean, late last year.
Can we get a bet with them? Because I would win all those bets, too.
You would.
Yeah.
And I think the most comical yet was over the weekend, Rubio won Puerto Rico.
Which doesn't count.
Well, which has 23 delegates, which in fairness is as many as New Hampshire has.
Yes.
So number-wise, they're the same. But the New York Times characterized it as a badly needed win for Rubio. And I just thought, boy, I don't think anybody was saying Rubio really needs to win Puerto Rico to turn this thing around. And it was just like you were watching them huff the fumes of this narrative that has died out.
But looking for some angle.
I wonder if there are any Rubio. I mean, we vote next Tuesday. I wonder if there are diehard Rubio supporters who still,
are holding out hope.
Are holding out that maybe he's going to pull something out in a contested convention, which at this point is really his main chance, or what their philosophy is. Maybe it's just a statement vote at this point, you know, a vote of disgust with the way that
there are other choices.
Trump and Cruz are, mm-hmm. are running their campaign.
312-981-7200.
Phone lines are not lighting
they
up.
They are not. 312-981-7200. Also, there are people who think that the University of Illinois Chicago should not be hosting Donald Trump as he he's giving a speech on Friday.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, he's going to be here in Chicago, and people are protesting. Obviously, the protesters will be out, but there's aldermen. There are people throughout the city who are saying that there's a petition going around that we should forbid him from giving a speech. I mean, I don't know what deal the University of Illinois Chicago has made with Donald Trump, how much he's paying them. I mean, the school's broke. I don't know if you just, you know, it's part of the campaign. It's not their fault that he's a front runner. I mean, you provide a space for someone to give their speech.
So is it, he's just having a rally there? He's mm-hmm. not addressing the students,
I don't think
per
so.
Se.
I think that it's just a rally, isn't it? I don't think he's there to, like, it's not, he's not being hired by the
he's
university.
He's not giving a speech to the university.
Not like a keynote address or something like that. I don't think so.
Huh, but yeah. He's using their space.
I don't know why he's using that. Now I've got to find out more information. Googling with Patty Vasquez. Let's see what, why.
Yeah, let's find out what's going on there. Yeah. I haven't heard about this at all.
From mm-hmm. what I've read is that the pavilion is their own entity.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can be rented out by
right.
whoever they please.
I see.
That makes
I
sense.
See.
Yeah. So why not take the cash?
Well, thank God Esmeralda was up on this story.
I read the news story. Helpless. The one news story. No.
The only one. And there are a lot of people that are upset about that.
Can we get away from politics for just
Please.
A minute?
And I think many people would encourage that.
Have you been watching the OJ show?
I have.
On
I'm
FX?
On my fourth episode. I fall asleep to it. There's something soothing about watching something that I live through that I'm kind of like, it's kind of like having CNN
on again. I'm totally with you. Just, yes.
I don't know what it is. And it's weird, obviously. I didn't see all of that. I didn't see OJ in the car with the gun in his mouth. And, you know, I don't
sure,
remember.
But the series is structured around these key memorable moments
yes.
that we all recall. Mm-hmm. And it's, I think, very deftly so, in fact, because you go along for a while and you get a little intrigue that maybe you didn't know about, but then you get something that's like, oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. I mean, there's something about having these bigger than life characters played by bigger than life actors, right? John Travolta.
Right.
And
isn't the casting amazing?
Oh, really? It really, really is. I have been watching it, and David Schwimmer as Kardashian. I mean, he's actually more interesting than I've seen him in a long, long time. I didn't like
Schwimmer.
Ross. Yeah, I didn't like Ross on Friends.
Oh,
he's my
no.
least favorite character. So there is something so slipperily weird. Is that doesn't make sense? But because it's a comment on today as well, because the
right.
Kardashian
yes.
children are entranced by the fame that their father is attracting. You know, when they see him on TV and the reporters don't know how to spell his name and they mispronounce it and they're chanting on the TV, they're like, Kardashian. You're like, oh, right. This is how the monster was created.
Yeah. I mean, and that, you know, the Kardashian stuff is some of the most fictionalized parts mm-hmm. of the show. That stuff, like the stuff with them in the restaurant, that's just made up from whole cloth.
Right.
But I love the light satire of that, especially with Kardashian giving his daughters the speech about how fame in itself is meaningless. And then, of course, you know, the joke is that they went on to become these icons of pure, empty mm-hmm. fame.
That's all they have.
Empty is not the right word.
Well, and their mother was mad at him because she was friends with Nicole.
Yep.
And
yep.
You know, so there's that splinter in the family. Anyway, yeah, that's all. Craig, are you watching the OJ show at all? The OJ, what is it called? The
American case? Crime Story, The People versus OJ Simpson.
I've seen none of it, actually. And I was 10 when the OJ case happened, mm-hmm. so it really, I didn't follow it the first time.
Yeah. Well, it was very, like, I was on vacation somewhere in a restaurant, and they had, like, the you know, the Bronco being,
yeah.
I the slowly chased down the highway. I didn't really realize any of that stuff, that he'd actually been pulled over first.
I was watching the basketball game that night, and you saw in the series, they recalled that it happened during the NBA Finals, I believe. And I remember them switching away from the basketball game, and at first being upset that they had sort of semi-preempted the basketball game, although they kept it in this little box on the TV screen, but then just being drawn into this bizarre, I mean, even then I was drawn to the media spectacle of this low-speed mm-hmm. chase
yeah.
that we all were mysteriously obsessed with for reasons that are still hard to discern, and that I think this series tries to ferret out.
And so many of the elements of race that
yeah.
were always there from the beginning, whether it was the LAPD or Johnny Cochran or Chris Darden, all those pieces of it, you know, whether or not he was, women who were mad at him for marrying a black woman, I mean, marrying a white woman,
mm-hmm.
or that
mm-hmm.
he wasn't really black because he was this icon of football. But, you know, at the end of everything, it really is, you know, Ron Goldman and Nicole who were murdered.
Yeah.
And brutally so. And so now, even with pieces of evidence possibly coming to light, which seems very strange too. I don't. Yeah.
The knife?
Yeah.
How crazy was that?
I don't. And do you realize that they actually were searching for that knife here in Chicago because he had traveled here with his
That's
golf
right.
bag?
That's
so they've
right.
been going through dumpsters. They were going through a field. They were trying to find that here as well.
Well, that knife, I mean, we don't know what this knife is that they found. And they found it a while ago, too.
Right.
The whole timeline of this knife is just, and what a time for it to come to light again when this show is on. But on the race issues, I think that that's the hallmark of this show. Like the complexities of
right.
the race tensions are what this show is based around. And I think that's its greatest strength, too. I think they do a great job. And the moment couldn't be more right for them to be exploring this, right?
It just
feels like a really resonant moment for them to be looking at this. And every episode, what I like is that it's not just this black versus white thing, but every episode introduces a new complexity and a new personal crisis. We get a lot of Christopher Darden in the mm-hmm. last episode, which I think you haven't seen yet. But looks at how these race issues played out, not only in the media and in the public, but on a personal level. And it's really, maybe sensitive is not the right word, but thoughtfully done.
Mm-hmm. I agree. There's because Johnny Cochran talks about this this man who was shot while he was trying to drive his wife to the hospital, and the police officers pulled him over, mm-hmm. and he was shot because he was driving too quickly and being black. And you know, he was saying that that's, you know, why wouldn't OJ run when, you know,
right.
black people are suspicious of the LAPD. But then there's that idea that he had no reason to because they idolized him too. It's all so very strange, and you're right, to be revisiting it now, it seems to be pertinent to
so many things. Just an exploration of the pernicious ways in which racism makes it impossible to practice justice.
Right.
You know, like, yeah, I think we all believe strongly at this point that OJ did it, obviously. But the show, I mean, watching the show, there are moments where I'm like, maybe OJ didn't do it, because the suspicion and the misconduct in the LAPD was so rampant. And you know, that to me is the key message of the show. And again, one that speaks to our current era very eloquently.
And how strange. Show Me the Money is gone with Cuba Gooding Jr. because he's really kind of absorbed into this very different role.
Yeah.
More after this with John Tatey from the AV Club, the senior editor. No, the editor-in-chief. Sorry, now I've demoted you. We promoted you, then demoted you. We should put you right where you belong. Editor-in-chief of the AV Club. More in just a moment on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez, 720 WGN. Yeah, Craig, I don't think we're talking about Game of Thrones tonight.
You sure?
We could if you want to. I don't know if there is. Is there any new developments?
I have not seen the trailer, but a trailer landed today.
There was a trailer. It came out today.
I wish I...
Did you watch it, Craig?
I've seen it, yes.
I'm a little sad. There's nothing out there that exists that I would be excited about a trailer, like whether it's movies or television. Even the Wonder Woman one, I guess, was kind of cool.
Captain America Civil War, that trailer is amazing.
Cool.
Okay.
I guess I'm with you for the most part, although I did enjoy, I like watching the Star Wars trailers, because I like the whole production of Star Wars, not just as a movie, but just as a managed pop cultural phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see how that sort of meta story plays out leading up to the movies.
All right.
What'd you think of
Game of Thrones? What does it reveal share?
Or one of the first scenes is of Jon Snow. One of the first things we see is
a very still dead
Jon Snow. Yeah.
And he's still dead in the trailer?
Actually, the voiceover even says he's gone. That is the sentence that is played as see him laying on the ground still bleeding. He is still bleeding, though, if you look really close.
And it doesn't go, or is he? They don't do that?
Yeah, maybe he's not.
Without saying as much, yeah.
But everything else was really cool. We got to see a lot of, you know, it's. I don't know, John, do you read all the books? Are you a book reader?
You know, I started, what is the first one?
Songs of Ice and Fire.
That's the series name. I forget what the first one's called.
But
I started reading the first one, and I had already seen the show, and I just said, you know what? I enjoy the show enough. That's plenty for me. I don't need to pour my life into these books as well. And I gather that they get more detailed.
The first book is actually called A Game of Thrones.
Oh, it is. The first one is Game of Thrones. Okay.
Well, and it's so interesting that the series became so entwined with the books. I mean, like rather than it being this own, like J.K. Rowling didn't necessarily write the books, have any concept of what the movie was going to be shaped by what the movie, you know, writers or the studios wanted.
The only thing that's different about the Harry Potter film series is that the books were always completed before the film came out.
Exactly.
This is now the official season in which almost every storyline will eclipse what's happening in the books.
Yeah.
The books are completely, you know, have been completely used for almost every single plot except a couple. And so it's interesting. There's no real spoilers out there. So a lot of what we're seeing, people are reacting to that do read the books because it's very new and may or may not be part of what they're going to get in the next book.
Yeah, I mean, I have found this so fascinating because it started out as sort of a typical book-to-screen adaptation and all the issues inherent therein. People were complaining about the changes, or not necessarily complaining, but at least noticing the changes from the book to the TV series. And now we have this weird situation where which one is definitive, which one is canonical, and the real answer is that neither of them is. They're both going to tell stories in this world, and they're going to follow the same plot points. You know, they've worked it out with George R. R. Miller. Greg, sorry. But, you know, they're not going to be the same. And I love that. I love stories that have polysemy. I think that's a word I've used on the show before and been teased for.
No, we appreciate you teaching us new words and incorporating them any way you can.
But I'm all about different interpretations of a single story, and I find it fascinating that it's going to be happening at about the same time, these two different takes on the same story. I guess sometimes you see it also with a novelization of a film. Speaking of Star Wars, you know, the novelization of Force Awakens contains a lot of story details that aren't in the film and actually explain a lot of what happened in the film, but this is really something unique, especially the way that the TV show like crept up on and then surpassed the books.
I have nothing to add because I've never watched.
Right, never watched. Well, that is what
episode of
that's what
you still haven't tried. Watched any.
So much mud. There's just so much mud.
That's what's happening with this.
It just looks so damp.
That is
smelly.
What's happening with this trailer, though, is a lot of the book readers are reacting to some of the stuff that was spoiled, and they don't understand it. So,
they're reacting to the trailer, even.
Yeah, well, because you know how they break down trailers now, and they separate the little scenes, and then they try to fully dissect what might be happening in each scene.
It is kind of tedious, and we at the AV Club, we try to steer clear of the sort of obsessive, like, here are all the secrets in the latest Game of Thrones trailer, or whatever it is,
right?
Because you get to a point where you're just drawing meaning from nothing, and you're not really doing your readers any service. But
there's a window, and it reflects this image that you didn't see in the trailer if you didn't look. But
the degree of obsession
means everything. Yeah.
Is over the top.
I'm going through the AV Club site right now, going through a lot of different. I mean, there's so much out there. But what is this theme of it's Die Hard on a piano, it's Die Hard on a bus that won't stop? I'm not sure what all these Die Hard elements are that are sort of being woven through.
I don't know.
It's Die Hard on a phone. Here, see, there's one right there in the middle. So am I too far back?
No. This is our watch this. So we have this daily feature called Watch This, and it has a weekly theme. Mm-hmm. So we'll give you throughout the week five movies, or every once in a while we'll do a week of TV shows. But we'll give you five movies to watch, and they're all according to a certain theme. And last week our theme was It's Die Hard on a Blank.
Right.
Movies that follow the Die Hard formula, but in a completely different context.
That idea of being trapped and you have to accomplish something if you want to be able to survive, or someone not get killed. And I agree, by the way, with whoever wrote this piece about Abe Vigoda's family felt cheated at the Academy Awards, which was that was ridiculous. I guess because they just how can they only associate him with one thing, which had to have been Barney Miller, right? I mean, he was in so many other things.
I mean, he was such a great character actor. That was a real omission. The prime, you know, the whole politics of this in memoriam reel are always kind of tacky and distasteful. But there was also a lot of hubbub over the fact that Leonard Nimoy got the final spot.
Yes, that was climactic. Huge.
Although, do you notice they don't applaud during this anymore?
They're very good about
that.
They
tell the crowd, you know, be quiet.
We'll come find you. More after this on 720 WGN.